This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day, despite the fact that federal officials are saying that the level of inoculation, the level of vaccination, has been going down in this country and been going down dramatically and dangerously, particularly involving young people in kindergarten and first grade and of that age. And I know that there are people out there who are hearing something like that and saying, well, it's good that kids aren't being vaccinated. It's good they're not being inoculated. We're not talking now about vaccinations concerning COVID-19. It's vaccinations concerning measles and whooping cough and many other diseases, but not including smallpox. Why not? Because kind of that's been a settled issue for a long time, but it didn't used to be. I'm very pleased to welcome to the show Andrew Werman, who teaches history at Central Michigan University and has written a fascinating, I mean, utterly compelling new book called The Contagion of Liberty, The Politics of Smallpox in the American Revolution. Professor Werman, congratulations on the book. And what is so striking about it is that it appears that the fear of vaccinations, this anti-vax movement, was very much a part of early American history, even before the Revolutionary War, wasn't it?
Well, thank you for having me, Michael. I'm excited to be here and excited to talk about the book. And, of course, I should mention that I did the research and writing of this book long before anybody had ever heard of COVID-19. It's really rooted in the disease of the past, smallpox, during the Revolution. And initially, very early on, as inoculation for smallpox was introduced in America, we can talk about how that happened, there was resistance. It was very strange to sort of purposely give yourself a disease that seems like you're playing God. God's supposed to do that. And to overcome the strangeness of getting inoculated as a way to confer immunity, to prepare yourself for epidemics, was resisted. But over time, in the decades leading up to the American Revolution, inoculation became more and more in demand. And we see that, of course, with George Washington agreeing to inoculate the Continental Army in 1777.
Well, of course, you make the point that Washington himself was in effect inoculated, because when he was a teenager and he was traveling with his brother to, I think it was the Bahamas.
Barbados.
Barbados, thank you. He contracted a very serious case of smallpox, so he himself was protected against it. You mentioned how the knowledge of inoculation and vaccination came to America. It came to America from Africa, and because of an enslaved African who was brought here. How did that work?
That's right, and it's a fantastic story. We could do the whole episode about it, or one of your podcasts about just this 1721 smallpox epidemic in Boston. But the idea was, did come from an African. So Cotton Mather, who was a minister in Boston, who had been known for his role, not in a good way, in the Salem witch trials, supporting the Salem witch trials, was given this man that Cotton Mather named Onesimus. And Mather asked him, have you ever had smallpox before? And Onesimus must have been very bright and answered, well, yes and no, and then described the process of inoculation, which was the purposeful implantation of smallpox via an incision in the arm, a little bit of the smallpox matter from a sick patient would be inserted into the skin. And a few days later, a light, a milder form of smallpox would appear. The patient would get sick, but not usually mortally so. And in a couple of weeks, they'd feel better, and they'd have lifetime immunity to the disease. Now, this process was known about in Africa and Asia, the Middle East, but Europeans were late in having this knowledge. So it came from this enslaved man first, and John Mather wasn't shy about saying so. He didn't steal the credit for himself. He said it came from Onesimus. But when he tried to convince others in Boston in 1721 to use this method, that's where the resistance came.
And then you also tell the story of Benjamin Franklin, who was an advocate for inoculation, but didn't do it on his own four-year-old son. And the result?
The result was awful. One of the biggest mistakes of his life, Franklin would go on to write in his autobiography. So Franklin had been a teenager in Boston during that 1721 epidemic. His brother had been opposed to inoculation, published about it in the newspaper there. But at some point, as Benjamin Franklin moved to Philadelphia, he was reading the statistics, which showed that inoculated patients survived much better than people who received smallpox in the natural way by breathing it in from a sick person. And he became convinced. He started writing in support of inoculation in his newspaper and in his almanacs, publishing the statistics from places around the world that had practiced inoculation. And when smallpox broke out in Philadelphia in 1736, rumor and news spread that Franklin's son, Francis, had died. And immediately, people who had been opposed to inoculation said, aha, we knew this inoculation was dangerous. Franklin inoculated his own son, and that led to his death. We shouldn't inoculate at all. This is a terrible thing. And Benjamin Franklin had to tail between his legs in his last edition of the newspaper of the year 1736. It was December 1736, and a little footnote at the bottom of the last page admitted that even though he had supported inoculation publicly, that he had not gotten his son Francis inoculated, and that he regretted it. The son died of natural smallpox. He and his wife Deborah had wanted to inoculate their son, but they delayed their decision. They put it off, and he caught smallpox and he died. Something that Franklin would never forget, and would for the rest of his life advocate for inoculation, so other parents wouldn't make the same mistake.
Okay, just one thing to frame the scope of this crisis that people faced with a smallpox contagion. The book is called The Contagion of Liberty. We're talking to the author, Andrew Werman. How many Americans in the colonial revolutionary period actually died of smallpox? It was actually even more, wasn't it, than people who died in the Revolution?
It was more. The entire epidemic, which spread across the whole continent, affected Native Americans, Black Americans in the South. They died in large numbers. Colonial Americans, white colonists, several thousand died in the whole epidemic. It's estimated in the sort of 7-8 years of this pandemic across the continent, probably 100,000 people died at a time where the population was only 2.5 million or so.
Which is incredible. They estimate 25,000 people may have died on the battlefield, and this is four times as much. The book, The Contagion of Liberty, The Politics of Smallpox and the American Revolution, it's posted up on our website at michaelmedved.com. And appreciate your conversation, Professor Werman.
Thanks for taking my call. You're the most brilliant radio talk host in America today.
The Michael Medved Show.
long should kids have to stay in a dangerous or failing school? In Washington, thousands of kids are assigned to chronically failing schools because they live in the wrong zip code. Michael Medved here for Washington Policy Center. If your child is stuck in a school that isn't helping them fulfill their full potential, shouldn't you have the right to find the educational environment that can? The purpose of public education is to educate children, not to maintain a specific delivery system. Go to FundStudentsFirst.com. Free history show streaming and a download of our daily show ad-free. That's what you get for all of 22 cents a day when you join us as a member, Medhead Plus. This is one of the great deals available to try to enhance appreciation for this greatest nation on God's green earth. Check it out at michaelmedved.com or medvedhistorystore.com.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and yes, so much more. Just go to the Radio Listener's Specials page at MyPillow.com and use the promo code MEDVED. That's MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVED, or call 1-800-320-6280. That's 800-320-6280. Don't miss this incredible BOGO extravaganza at MyPillow.com. Buy one, get one free on select products. Remember, that's promo code MEDVED or 1-800-320-6280.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
On the Michael Medved Show, pleasure to continue the conversation with Professor Andrew Werman, who teaches history at Central Michigan University. He did his PhD work at Northwestern University, and he previously taught at Marietta College in Marietta, Ohio, which has its own fascinating history. His new book is called The Contagion of Liberty, The Politics of Smallpox and the American Revolution. And we were just talking about this huge percentage of human beings who were directly impacted, very often killed, because smallpox was most often fatal when people contracted the disease, in colonial America. And by the way, I'm sure, Mr. Werman, what is the incidence of smallpox right now in the United States?
It's zero. There is no smallpox, which is a wonderful thing to be able to say.
Isn't that a wonderful thing? How did that happen?
It happened, well, it originated back here in the early 18th century into the 19th century with the discovery of inoculation and vaccination. Folks during the Revolution dreamed of one day eliminating smallpox. They thought they'd be able to do it within their own lifetimes, and of course that was got a little bit ahead of themselves. But it took a concerted effort of governments around the world, a partnership between the United States and the Soviet Union during the Cold War, to send World Health Organization agents to countries around the world, some, you know, really war-torn places. Somalia, Afghanistan were some of the last places that had active smallpox cases. And because smallpox is only a human disease, it's not in any animal population, as soon as you could vaccinate and contain and quarantine any active cases of smallpox, as soon as you could do that, the World Health Organization in 1980 could declare that smallpox is over, eradicated from the earth, from the human population.
Now, which is just a wonderful thing, and may that happen for many other diseases. Why was, in the midst of this, when they were very early in this process of inoculation, at the time of the American Revolution, there was a fight within revolutionary ranks about the process of inoculation and the availability of it. Explain why that was such a controversial matter within the ranks of the American revolutionaries.
Well, inoculation had been pretty well proven to be effective, wholly effective, to give immunity against smallpox. But the procedure itself, as it developed in the 1700s, became very expensive to administer. Doctors charged a lot for it, and getting inoculated, the process of it itself, took about a month. You would get the inoculation, which only took a moment for the incision, but then you'd be sick for several weeks, and the difference between inoculation and later vaccination was that inoculated patients were infectious. They could spread smallpox to other people, so they had to be quarantined while they were sick. So usually for 3 to 4 weeks. And so if you think about an average worker, average laborer, not only would have to pay a doctor his fee, but also pay for the room and board and pay for all of that missed work. So there's a demand from individuals for inoculation. They want the government to provide it for them. And there were communities that shut down the whole city. Boston did this twice during the Revolution, to allow the public to inoculate together, because if everyone inoculates at the same time, you don't have to keep people separate from each other. You can all go through it at once, and then the whole community becomes immune. During the revolution and during the war, soldiers were demanding to be inoculating. Some of them were sneaking off and inoculating themselves, or using their enlistment bounties to go secretly get inoculated from a doctor or other provider. George Washington was opposed to this at first. He wanted to protect the troops against smallpox, of course, but he hoped to do it through quarantine, through strict containment. Ultimately, that doesn't work, and Washington is listening to this pressure. His own doctors are advising him that they can pull this off, that they can do a mass inoculation of the troops without harming their readiness to fight. The soldiers are demanding it. Martha Washington herself goes and gets inoculated in June of 1776, even though George Washington thinks she won't actually do it, she does. All of these factors I describe in the book are putting pressure on George Washington, who has enough pressure, right, during the revolution itself. But in February 1777. He listens to the experts, he listens to his soldiers, and he changes his mind, very dramatically so, makes an about-face, I say in the book, and decides to try it, to initiate the inoculation of the Continental Army, and it's a tremendous success. Washington never waffles after that, becomes lifelong committed to inoculating against smallpox.
The book is called The Contagion of Liberty, The Politics of Smallpox in the American Revolution. The term contagion of liberty, what are the origins?
That phrase comes from another historian, a great historian at Harvard named Bernard Bailyn, who describes the American Revolution itself, the ideas of freedom and liberty, as a kind of contagion that spread from the United States to other countries, right, overthrowing monarchy and giving political independence to the people. It's a wonderful phrase. I turn around and use it a bit more literally in saying that the contagion of liberty is this strange process called inoculation that so many Americans were demanding during the Revolution.
And again, it is such a fascinating tale, and it's so important for people who look at the victory of the colonists in the American Revolution as something of a miracle. That was certainly what the founders did. Very quickly, the Adams family and the smallpox issue.
So John Adams, well, and Abigail, but especially were interested in inoculation and sought it. John Adams asked for Abigail's hand in marriage in 1764. They were supposed to get married in the spring, but Boston was having a smallpox epidemic and was doing what they call a general inoculation, shutting down the whole city so that people could come in and inoculate freely. And John Adams wanted his chance to get immune. So he put off the wedding until the fall. Abigail's parents wouldn't let her go to Boston to get inoculated. John Adams does it. And then later during the Revolution, 1776, Abigail takes her chance with the children and gets them all inoculated themselves. They were firm advocates of it.
Those stories are fascinating and remarkable. The Contagion of Liberty, posted at our website at michaelmedved.com.
800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com. Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
USA News Update.
The most eerie thing, and the train kept getting louder and louder.
At least 9 people are dead. More deaths are feared after dozens of tornadoes tore through the southern U.S. The National Weather Service said some of the worst damage was in Selma, Alabama.
I could hear glass just pop, pop, and I just said, let it end, let it end.
That's where a large and extremely dangerous tornado blasted the historic city and surrounding area yesterday. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is calling on Congress to raise the debt limit. In a letter to Republican House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Yellen urged Congress to act promptly to protect the full faith and credit of the United States. Rihanna is promoting her upcoming Super Bowl 57 halftime performance in a teaser trailer that highlights how it's been 6 years since she's dropped a new album. February 12th, State Farm Stadium, Glendale, Arizona. Dave Collins, USA News.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at gcnfreecbd.com. That's gcnfreecbd.com. Again, gcnfreecbd.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Michael Medved show. I mentioned earlier in the show that in terms of this cultural revolution that the left is trying to foist on the entire world, there is yet another victim. And the victim is actually an organization and a tradition that I feel a great tenderness for. And I feel great tenderness because my wife at one point was the leader of a brownie troop. And both of our daughters, when they were little girls, were very proud to be brownies. And in our kitchen, we have a picture. There's a photograph I see all the time of Sarah and Shayna in their brownie uniforms and Diane very proudly presiding over the brownie troop. And I've always thought that this aspect of Girl Scouts was terrific. And now I'm told I should feel guilty about that. And why? What's wrong with the brownies? Here's the story. The Girl Guides, Canada's equivalent to the Girl Scouts, has renamed its brownies branch in an effort to become more inclusive after current and former members who are people of color said that the name had caused them harm. Now, by the way, it uses the term harm. Not pain, not discomfort. That would be bad enough. But how does joining a brownie troop cause you harm? Girls in the branch, which is for 7 and 8 year olds, will now be called Embers after an online vote by members. That's not intended to rhyme, but it does. The Girl Guides of Canada announced yesterday. Okay. When you say I'm an Ember, when I was being rounder up, the Girl Guides announced in November of last year that it would be retiring the Brownies name to create a more welcoming atmosphere. The administrator who's responsible for this change said that the organization first became aware of objections to the Brownies name after the murder of George Floyd in May 2020 set off global protests against racial injustice. How does the name Brownies, what Brownies refers to is in Scottish folklore, there are little fairies, pixies. The Brownies are particularly benign little magical beings that supposedly, according to Scottish folklore, they come out at night and help clean up or plant things or do useful things around the house or the farm. The spokesperson for the Girl Guides, whose name is Elmanovitz, said that former members shared stories about not wanting their daughters to join the organization because of their own experiences with the name. Others said that they had joined as Sparks, left the Girl Guides, and then returned after Brownies, or waited to join the Girl Guides until after they had reached an age that would allow them to join a branch that wasn't called Brownies. She said the organization had prepared to have difficult conversations about the name change. Why is this so fraught and difficult? And created a specific guide for leaders who would need to explain the name change to the girls of the affected branch. How do you explain the name change other than that we're idiots? The name change will be phased in over the next few months as the organization updates its websites, training sessions, marketing materials, and other resources, the organization said. The Embers name is expected to be fully adopted by September of 2023. The name Brownies is still used, they note in the New York Times, by similar organizations, including Girl Scouts of the USA and the Girl Guides in Britain. But what do you want to bet? That because of this change in Canada, that particular contagion is going to come to the United States too. In an online frequently asked questions about the name change, the Girl Guides of Canada said that the name change was not about the origin of the name Brownies, which it said was from folklore, but about how it made girls feel. This was a name that made them feel extremely uncomfortable, prompted teasing and racist comments, and was a barrier to feeling that they belong as Girl Guides, the organization said. Continuing to use a name that we have been directly told by girls had caused them harm would go against everything that we stand for in an organization. There's an animated video promoting the name change that shows glowing orange and red embers against a navy background. No brown anywhere in sight, thank goodness. Words appear on screen that say, "As an ember, you have potential that's just waiting to be unleashed." So there's a fiery change. There's also more on a story that we touched upon briefly yesterday. The story of USC, University of Southern California's Suzanne Dworak Peck School of Social Work, where they also were making a change. And they were making a change involving something almost as wounding, harmful, devastating, insensitive as the term Brownies. It's the word field. And what they write, and making this announcement to the students and faculty, at University of Southern California, this is dated January 9th, "We would like to share a change we are making to ensure our use of inclusive language and practice. Specifically, we have decided to remove the term field from our curriculum and practice and replace it with practicum. This change supports anti-racist social work practice by replacing language that could be considered anti-black or anti-immigrant in favor of inclusive language. Excuse me, the word field to refer to anything, the field that I'm studying for is social work, that is anti-immigrant and anti-black, non-inclusive language? Language can be powerful, they declare, and phrases such as going into the field or field work may have connotations for descendants of slavery and immigrant workers that are not benign. In solidarity with universities across the nation, our goal is not just to change language, but to honor and acknowledge inclusion and reject white supremacy, anti-immigrant, and anti-blackness ideologies. We are committing to further align our actions, behaviors, and practices with anti-racism and anti-oppression, which requires taking a close and critical look at our profession, our history, our biases, and our complicity in past and current injustices. No, this is not a parody. It's real. And, Jeremy, I think what this means is I have to really get you guys to be, and maybe to have a buzzer that presses it, something like that. If I ever use the term field. Yeah, I mean, this, are we honestly supposed to take this kind of thing seriously? And when people are reacting to the death of George Floyd by changing the names of what actually is an adorable and very cherished organization for 8-year-olds, is the country entirely going mad? Sometimes you have to wonder, don't you? We will be right back on the MedVed Show.
Liar, 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 liar.
You're blue.
The Michael MedVed Show.
Okay, it's winter time, and that shouldn't stop you from going outdoors and enjoying yourself and getting some exercise. Relief Factor can help with that cause. Relief Factor is natural. It consists of fish oil and turmeric primarily and other ingredients that have been tested and shown to be remarkably effective. A Relief Factor can make you feel better and give you an opportunity to enjoy all kinds of aspects of an active life that you may have been prevented from enjoying in the past. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner. There's a special price available for what is called a quick start with Relief Factor. You take these tablets, which are entirely natural, no chemicals, no preservatives of any kind. This is a wonderful product that we heartily endorse. Go to michaelmedved.com, look for the banner for Relief Factor. We've all heard the saying, safety in numbers. Well, think again. The IRS, the country's powerful tax collection agency, is on a hiring spree. They're bringing in 87,000 new agents. Now, no taxpayer at any income level is entirely safe from IRS scrutiny or, worse, a dreaded IRS audit. This is Michael Medved for AmFed Coin and Bullion. How safe are your accumulated savings and wealth from government examination and reach? Owning gold and silver is one of the best ways to keep your wealth in your own hands. Precious metals provide a layer of privacy that's not available through a bank account. When you own precious metals, only you and your dealer have knowledge of your purchase. Now, I buy all of my precious metals from my friend Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. Nick's been in this industry for 41 years, and he has established a reputation built on trust, transparency, integrity, and fair pricing. Call Nick and his team, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W, 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Michael Medved Show, there is still more in the Cultural Revolution file. And again, sometimes it's very difficult to even follow any logic or attempt at making a logical case that goes with some of this. Currently, there's a University of Pittsburgh gender and sexual development program. And there is a spokesperson for the gender and sexual development program at the University of Pittsburgh that is talking about the viability of uterine transplants from live donors in the interest of facilitating gender reaffirmation, or they should call it gender confirmation surgery and transitions. And help me, if you can, try to follow exactly what is being talked about here. Listen.
An area that had not been looked at before in any serious way was, could the donors be live donors? Because in the original study, the conclusion was that they would have to be cadaver-based donors or from individuals who are no longer alive, right? So live donation has been something the community has talked about for decades. It was really seen as magical thinking. This would be a live donation from a person who was assigned female at birth but identified as a transgender man. And they said, well, you know, I have these parts. I don't want them. You want them. You need them. So what if I gave them to you? How would that work? And apparently, based on their research, this is actually viable. Anecdotally, many, but not all, transgender women, especially those who transition younger in life, have expressed an interest in having children in a way that is congruent for their own bodies.
Okay. There's more. Listen.
Still surprising to see the data. It was a fairly large study, as transgender studies go, 182 transgender women, 60% of which were aged in the ideal 20 to 29 age range, and most had no children. 94% indicated they had a desire for children. Most of them reacted very favorably, something like 90 to 80% in favor of various aspects of having a vaginal transplant, having a uterine transplant, and in the UTX, this would all be part of the same transplant. The tissue would be preserved from the parts of the vagina all the way to the uterus. Having menstruation, experiencing gestation and carrying a life inside them. And overall, these results suggested that most transgender women would choose to have female physiological experiences, such as menstruation, gestation, as well as potentially having a physiologically functioning transplanted vagina.
Okay, this is not a joke. One of the questions that occurs to me, and I'm sorry, it's inevitable. Can you imagine how expensive something like that would be? To have a vagina and a uterus taken out of someone, quote, who doesn't want it, somebody who is what they call a transgendered male, someone who used to be a female and wants to get rid of the female body parts, and then to have that transplanted into a transgendered female, which is someone who does not come with that equipment. What we are talking about here, because the general gender confirmation surgery that they have now costs like $500,000 or more. But this would be millions of dollars. Who is going to pay for this? And when we have a medical system that is often stressed in any event, that you're going to use medical resources for this so that people who were born male can experience the joys of menstruation? I mean, are we serious here? Is there going to be a government program to fit this authorization? Does it not seem like, again, this is perhaps some kind of parody? It isn't. It's deadly serious. And the idea that that it's being discussed and taken seriously as a medical possibility for the immediate future. Speaking of money and where you go on money, the headline, and I give them credit because they're covering this in the New York Times and they didn't seem to cover it anywhere else. And it says, rule could give lawmakers, that means members of Congress, $34,000 pay bump. A little-noticed rule change made quietly by Democrats in the final days of their majority last year could give House members a long-delayed increase in compensation, allowing them to be reimbursed for the cost of lodging, food, and travel while they are on official business in Washington. For the past dozen years, House members have declined to take a cost of living increase in the annual spending bills, fearful of a political backlash if they were seen to give themselves a raise. But this new provision, tucked into internal rules that typically receive little attention from the public and without any open debate on Capitol Hill, could amount to a subsidy of about $34,000 per member. That's this year. That would be a substantial increase for lawmakers who spend weeks on end in the nation's capital, where living costs are among the highest in the United States. They chose to get there. Feel so sorry for George Santos. In an email sent by the Chief Administrative Office of the House, congressional officers were advised not to submit reimbursement requests for rental and housing costs until the committee has issued additional guidance, but some Republicans were quick to criticize it. Appropriately, you can have a good public policy debate on whether congressmen should be paid more in order to attract a better bunch, and you can have a reasonable debate on inflation adjustments, but it really ought to be done in public, said former Representative Mo Brooks, Republican of Alabama. That's my biggest beef, that it was a clandestine secret. Well, Congressman Brooks, kind of every secret is by definition clandestine. But while rank-and-file members make $174,000 a year, not bad, well above the median salary in the United States, many of them maintain residences both in their districts and in Washington. The increase in compensation is aimed at helping them defray the costs of a secondary residence. Okay, the idea that taxpayers should pay for your decision to maintain two residences, one in Washington and one in the district you represent, and the idea that this isn't discussed. They're talking about what this is anticipated to cost is the increase in compensation would come to about, with 440 current members, about $15.1 million. And again, when you look at the size of the federal budget, that's not a grotesque, gigantic amount, but it's a lot. And there should have been some attention to this, and with the great desire of various members of Congress to get attention to themselves, I think that at least debating this and the question of reimbursement for the House, that would have been worthwhile. Meanwhile, coming up, we're going to be talking about one of the most painful and pressing problems in America right now. And it's something that impacts just about everybody. We're talking about how we are handling the homeless population. There are estimates now that as many as 600,000 people, maybe many more, actually live on the streets today or crowded in homeless shelters. And how many of those people are mentally ill? There are all kinds of estimates, but there has been a very courageous piece that appeared in the New York Times about I'm the last barrier between my sister and New York City. And it's by a writer named Hillary DeVries, who I haven't met, but she focuses in her work on the impact on individuals and families by larger political and cultural forces. And one of those forces that she has had to deal with is the inability to deal with her homeless and mentally ill sister. We will get to this question, and what can the country do about it in this greatest nation on God's green earth?
Hi, Fred Dwyer here. If you suffer from a serious chronic illness, heartburn, poor sleep, fatigue, brain fog, you need Balance 7. Balance 7 water improves the acid-alkaline balance in the body. The right pH helps unlock the immune system. It also allows for better hydration and nourishment during times of medication and stress. Balance 7 works. I know. I use it every day. Now you can try it free. Balance 7 is offering chronic illness sufferers a free gallon of Balance 7 water for the first 100 callers. That's an $87 value free. So call 800-793-9039 and mention my name, Fred. The first 100 callers suffering with a chronic illness get a free gallon of Balance 7 water. So call 800-793-9039, code word Fred, or visit balance7.com. That's balance, the number 7.com. 800-793-9039, code word Fred.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.